Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin on the Leslie Marshall Network.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. You've got me for 3 hours today. As you know, normally I just do the first hour, and happy to do that. And probably I'm going to be doing mostly that in the future because I'm running for office again. That's right, in the State House in Virginia. Pretty much no one in my district can hear me because I've been removed from my local station during the pendency of the campaign. That's actually normal. That's part of the equal time rule. I respect that. The irony is that I'm now talking to people who cannot vote for me unless you're listening online, in which case, please remember to vote on June 9th if you live in Northern Virginia, Eastern Alexandria, South Arlington.
And Mark, where can they find the website?
Oh, yeah, I'm at markfordelegate.com. I'm also on Facebook, on my facebook.com/Levin for Virginia. You can find me pretty easily there. Just type Mark Levin for delegate. And if you like what I have to say and you want to help me in Virginia and want to contribute a few bucks, that is certainly welcome.
All right. So one more time, the website
is markfordelegate.com.
It's F-O-R.
M-A-R-K-F-O-R-D-E-L-E-G-A-T-E, markfordelegate.com.
And the Facebook page
is facebook.com/Levin for Virginia, or maybe it's Levin for VA. I don't even know, but you can go to my Facebook, and it's linked there. Let's find out. This is all new. I'm running again, I'll
tell you.
That's
good. This is how you can tell he's not a career politician, people.
There you go. Well, you know, this is a fairly new race for me. I ran last year for Congress, but this one came as a complete surprise. My delegate of many years retired, and so I'm moving fast.
And not to throw you off, Mark, but what drives you to run for office? I think you and I have talked about this before.
A fair question. By the way, it's Levin for Virginia, apparently, is what it is.
Got it. So facebook.com/Levin for Virginia.
Right. Or barkfordelegate.com. And feel free to contact me just on Facebook or something, or Twitter if you want to help. And you'll find me somehow. You know, that's actually, I'm glad you asked that, Mark, because I've been thinking about that as I've been getting very little sleep lately and not eating much lately. And mostly the problem is that the guy who's a very good guy who I'm seeking to continue after he retires decided kind of at the last minute he didn't want to run. And so everything has to be done in 2 months, which is crazy. I mean, if I had a year to plan this, I'd be fine. But as I'm getting very little sleep and trying to throw a campaign together and hiring a campaign manager, and by the way, all this back stuff that you have to do for a campaign, which I guess I didn't really realize, and I've been talking about politics and policies for 12, 13 years on the radio, for 20 years in my life. And it's a lot of work. You got to get the mail pieces out. You got to, you want to call all the people that can vote for you. You got to raise money, which I really hate doing. You've got to, write your message and attend all these events and make sure you haven't missed anything. And then there's a whole bunch of technical requirements and signatures and petitions and bank accounts and setting up. I don't need to bore you with those details because I'm bored with those details. So why do I run? Well, because I learned at a fairly early age that bad things happen when good people do nothing. And I learned the hard way. I have always been somewhat active politically. My family actually has always been active politically. In fact, my aunt, it's a story. You know what? I've got some time on the air. I've got 3 hours today. Let me tell you a little bit about these things. My aunt went. So I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. That's my hometown. I often joke it's all in my book, Bagels, Grits, and Quiche, Stories of a Southern Jewish Gay American. I haven't written that book yet, but hey, I still got some life to live before I do my autobiography. But I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, and I've always had sort of a love-hate relationship with the South. There's a lot that's good in the South. People in the South are very friendly. They're very real. Even if they don't like you, they tell it to your face, which is preferable sometimes from people in the Northeast. But listen, the South is full of lots of pathologies of race, poverty, Republicans. You know, those are three pathologies. the South definitely has a conservative streak. And yet, so I love the South. I hate the South. It's my home. It always will be, even though I haven't lived in Nashville for quite a while. In any case, my family grew up there. My grandfather was a Southerner, but he was always against segregation laws. He was always for letting blacks in his store. My great-grandfather went from a peddler who just could afford a sack on his back to actually owning a number of women's dress stores, inexpensive women's dress stores. Anyway, my grandfather was not a typical Southerner, but of course, as a Jewish Southerner, he certainly wasn't. And he very much opposed all those racist laws down there. But when the 1960s came and my aunt, my mother's sister, decided that she wanted to go down to Mississippi in the very famous Mississippi Freedom Summer to register black people to vote. And remember, black people couldn't vote in Mississippi in 1964. Something like 1 or 2% were registered because they used all kinds of tricks to make it hard. They would have poll taxes and require them to name the number of beans in jelly beans in a jar, or to recite the Constitution.
What?
Yeah, no, they did. They did. They also would ask them to recite the Constitution and explain what habeas corpus meant and ex post facto laws and other things that really constitutional lawyers know, but I don't blame you if most Americans don't know, and certainly most Mississippi voters don't know, and the white voters didn't know. But what they said basically is the white voters didn't have to go through all of this if their grandfather voted. The idea being, and this dates back to slavery days, obviously the slaves couldn't vote. So the poor whites who couldn't answer these impossible questions or read the Constitution and explain what every word meant, they didn't have to do this if their grandfather voted. That was meant not to be racist, just if your grandfather voted. But of course it was, because grandfathers who were slaves didn't vote. That, by the way, became known as the grandfather clause. And the idea was that if something existed for a certain way, namely whites could vote and blacks were slaves, then Mississippi would continue it. Ironically, to this day, people talk about grandfather clauses, and really they use it in very, very normal ways. We understand that when you grandfather something in, it means that you get to keep things the way they are, even though things change, right? So if you grandfather in a zoning law, you get to keep your house there, even though it's now been zoned commercial. If you grandfather in a change in drinking laws, then you get to drink under the old laws, but the new people follow a new law. And that's what grandfather clauses today means. It's just interesting what an incredibly racist past this very common phrase we use in the law came from. In any case, my aunt went down to Mississippi to register black people, and she, like most young people, idealistic people in 1964, she had hair down to her waist. Her husband had long hair and a long beard, and they were driving to Mississippi from New York City, where they'd been living, in their VW microbus. You could not get more stereotypical young hippie than my aunt and uncle in their VW microbus with New York plates. And they arrived at my grandfather's home, her father's home in Nashville, Tennessee, and told my grandfather what they planned to do. And he said, "You're going to get killed." You may know that three young people coming from the North had just gotten murdered. Cheney and Goodman and Schwerner, a black kid from, I believe Cheney was from Mississippi, though I'm not sure about that. The two white kids actually were Jews from the North, and that certainly was what my aunt was. And my grandfather got very worried about her, and he told her not to go. And she got very upset with him, and she said, "Daddy, these are your values, these values of inclusion and putting an end to racism, and well, not an end to racism, but at least allowing Mississippi blacks to vote, doing the best to treat people equally." And he said, yeah, they're my values, but part of my values are also you not getting killed, my daughter not getting killed. So they argued about it for a while, and then they came up with what I've always thought was an ingenious solution. My grandfather said, all right, you can go. Of course, my aunt was going to go anyway, but but he said, you can go, but you've got to take my car, my Tennessee car with Tennessee plates that's not a VW microbus, but is a good old, I don't know, Oldsmobile or Chevrolet, good old standard American car with Tennessee plates. And this way, when you go down, you register black people, you won't cause them to take notice. And they agreed. And my aunt went down in 1964 in Mississippi Freedom Summer, and she went down without incident. And I've often thought about that story, which, of course, occurred before I was born, but to me is the perfect marriage of idealism and practicality. Sometimes I feel like people, Democrats, liberals, are so concerned about practicality, so concerned about danger to, from something or other, that they give up on their ideals. And I fight that every chance I can. But also, and those of you who've heard me now for years on the radio know that I also fight against people whose ideal trumps their practicality. Like all the people that want third parties and are going to end up voting for those third parties against a flawed Democratic candidate, which just ends up helping the Republican. And the clearest case, obviously, is 2000, when Ralph Nader, if 100 of his voters, a few hundred of his voters in Florida, if they'd simply voted for Gore, held their nose and recognized that while they preferred Ralph Nader, Al Gore was better than George Bush, or if they'd done it in New Hampshire, if one-third of the Nader voters in New Hampshire had simply decided that Gore was better than Bush. And if you're a Nader voter, how could you not think Gore was better than Bush? We wouldn't have had the closeness of the election that the Supreme Court could later steal. And so anytime people complain about third parties, I say, look, you want the Democrats to be more progressive? Then by all means, fight in the primaries. That's what primaries are all about. I'm undergoing a primary June 9th. Go and fight in the primaries and get the most progressive or the Democrat you like the best to win in the primaries. But if that Democrat should not prevail, that I mean, I get this, by the way, with Elizabeth Warren supporters, and I love Elizabeth Warren. No one can claim they are bigger fans of Elizabeth Warren than I. She is brilliant. She is effective. She is a great speaker. She doesn't take guff from anyone. And when people don't answer her questions, she pushes them to the wall. She's she's a Harvard professor, but she comes from a family of modest means in Oklahoma. She knows what it's like. She cares about people who are the least well off. She's a fantastic candidate. She's a fantastic candidate. But I know people who say, well, you know, if Elizabeth Warren doesn't run and Hillary does and Hillary gets the nomination, I'm going to vote for some third party or I'm not going to vote. And I could say, look, you have every right to prefer Elizabeth Warren over Hillary Clinton. You every right. You're an American and push Elizabeth to run and maybe you'll vote for Bernie Sanders, who is a socialist. And if that's your view, great. That's what primaries are all about. And if you want to fight the two-party system and you think we should have a three-party system, I support that too. I mean, I think in Louisiana, for example, they've got – and there are not many things I praise Louisiana about. But one of the things they do in Louisiana is they take the top two candidates and run them against each other in a runoff, 50%. And if that were the case in the other states, you could vote for your Green. You could vote for your Socialist. And if they didn't get in the top two – then I'd ask you in the runoff to hold your nose and vote for the Democrat. But we don't live in that world except in a few places like Louisiana. And sometimes people let the ideal trump the good, trump the practicality. And I've always thought about that story of my aunt and her father in the car with the Tennessee plates. We can do good on this earth, but we can do so in ways that are going to work and don't just satisfy our ideals. So that partly answers your question, Mark, but since you raised it, I'll go into more of it after the break. If you want to call in and ask me some questions or tell me what makes you stand up for liberal causes, toll-free number is 888-653-7543. Right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's Mark Levine. Getting a little biographical today in answer to Mark Romali's question of why I'm running for office. And so it's kind of an open mics night. 888-653-7543. I'll tell you more about what drives me. And I also want to hear what drives you. What makes you listen to progressive talk radio? Whether you're a progressive or a conservative, by the way. What makes you care? What makes you care about politics? Why do you care what happens to your fellow American or your fellow local person or your fellow human being around the world or whatever you care about? Animals, climate change, the environment, racism, civil rights, guns, immigration, the economy, income disparity, you name it. What makes you tick? And I'll try to tell you more about what makes me tick. Paul from Seattle is on line five. Hey, Paul, how are you?
Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Hey, listen, I have to say, I don't share your love-hate relationship with the South. I just have the hate part, so...
Have you been to the South? Have you lived in the South?
No, I've never lived there. I would never live in the South. I've been to the South. I have a few friends who live there.
Where have you been?
Huh?
Where have you been?
North Carolina, Florida.
Okay. All right. Depending on where you are in Florida, the northern part, of course, is the South, and the southern part is not the South. Tricky, but true.
But it's all wacky. Florida's just all wacky.
Florida's pretty wacky state. I'll agree with you that Florida's a wacky state. Listen, let me be very clear. I grew up in the South. I know the South, and I particularly know Nashville, Tennessee, much better than Mississippi or Alabama or the Deep South. And I'm sure we agree on the parts that we hate about the South. So let me tell you some of the things I love, because, like I said, we agree on the racism and intolerance and the bad parts of the South. And I can go into them with you, but we just be agreeing with each other. I do think there is some element in the South that is a bit more true, a bit more honest, even bad honest. But I'd much rather someone tell me they hate me to their face than tell me they hate me behind my back.
And well, you can get ISIL to do that.
What's that?
You can get ISIS to do that.
Well, I'm not talking about murderous hate. I'm just talking about in the South. I think people are more direct, even when it's hurtful. And at least you know, okay, you know, he's wearing a Klansman's robe. I'm staying away from him. You know, I think in the North, people are more likely to say they're not racist and really be racist. Whereas in the South, racists will kind of just tell you who they are. So I don't like either kind of racist, but I guess I'd rather have an honest one than a dishonest one.
Well, do you mean prejudice or racist?
Because both.
A person that you say from the North who might say that person might be prejudiced but not support racist institutional racism.
I would even argue, and we're going to talk later on about, in fact, tomorrow, about Alabama, which is the Deep South and the way they elect judges down there. Institutional racism, I think, is slowly going away. Maybe you disagree with me. But whether it's Ferguson or Alabama, very few people, I think, openly support institutional racism. We'll talk about it after the break. You want to call in 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. Back after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine talking about what inspires me to run for office, and I want to know what inspires you as well to fight for progressive causes. And I was talking about a story, my aunt going down to Mississippi in 1964 during Freedom Summer. If you want to call in, it's 888-653-7543. Paul from Seattle was telling me he has no love-hate relationship with the South. He only has hate. Paul, well, let me ask you, Paul.
Let me give you first.
I hope you know there are liberals in the South. There are people. I mean, my aunt, right? My grandfather. They were Southerners, and they went to help blacks register in the South. There's a wonderful clip by a guy. I love this. And I think it was Alabama, where this guy that looks like a total redneck. I mean, he's this out in the country. He's this big, heavy set white guy with tattoos. He looks rough. And he goes and he makes a joke about gay marriage. And you think, oh, great, this is going to be some homophobe. And then he goes and he says, well, nothing's really changed around here. The chickens are still in the coop. And, yeah, gay people are getting married. And, the shed's still here. And this pile of trash is still here. I guess nothing has changed. And you realize that he's a liberal making a joke based on his standard redneck stereotype. So I guess what I would say to you is, yes, the South still has tremendous problems. Yes, there's still institutional racism in the South. But I don't want you to throw it all out and say it's all evil, because the South, just like anywhere else, does have a variety of people.
Well, I probably shouldn't have, but since you were talking about the South, I made it regionalistic. But full disclosure here, I was born and raised in Michigan.
Okay.
I grew up.
No, I gathered you weren't a Southerner.
Yeah. Well, but wait, they said the South shall rise again. It is all the way up to Michigan now.
Well, Michigan's a mess right now. Excuse
Michigan's
me.
And that's why I came here to Seattle 25 years ago. I will never go back to that wreck of a state where my folks still live. And I go back once a year to visit in June and see how much worse the roads are again this year than last year. But the thing is that then you asked it, what makes me fight for progressive issues?
Yeah.
Look, Mark, the issues, it's not progressive, it's the issues. The issues are progressive. We're not even on the same page with parties here. Well, I'm talking about Social Security, I'm talking about wages, I'm talking about labor rights, I'm talking about all these kinds of things.
And you happen to live in the one city in the nation to get $15 an hour wages, which is fantastic.
Yeah, the whole thing was started by a socialist.
Yep.
And Kashama Sawant was pilloried for what a stupid idea. But you know what? She won the fight.
And I suspect your economy's humming along just fine.
It's doing great. And so is California doing great. Other than the water, California is creating jobs faster than any state in the nation. But what I'm saying is when these are the things we're talking about, wages, Social Security, in terms of economic security, we got the Republican Party talking about gay marriage and religious rights to discriminate against. We're not even arguing about how to fix Social Security or how we're going to deal with wage disparity and wealth disparity. We're not even arguing over the same issues. We're not even in the same book of issues with the Republicans. And that's why I say when I'm supporting, quote, progressive issues, I'm supporting the issue. I'm arguing for the issues, not these other distractions that the Republican Party is, we got Sam Brownback saying you can't use food stamps to eat meals on a cruise ship. Yeah, guess why? When you're on a cruise ship, the food is free. Okay, come on, Sam, wake up.
Yeah.
These are the stupid
and actually
things.
A little bit later in probably the next hour, I want to talk about Kansas, which has now passed a law preventing families on welfare from taking their kids to public swimming pools.
You see, so
did you hear about that? I mean, it's just cruel. It's just mean. It's we hate poor people. We hate black people. We want them to suffer. It's pure evil.
So to me, Mark, these are the issues that are kind of.
But Kansas, to defend my home region, is not a southern state. I just want to point that out.
Which one?
Kansas, not a southern state.
They were either a border state or a neutral state, weren't they?
Well, they were a territory during the Civil War, there was Bleeding Kansas, and all right, you can. But it's not a southern state. No, it's Midwest. Damn it, we're not taking Kansas.
Well, what I'm saying is the conservative issues are what they're against. They're not about fixing anything. So
okay, but if you want to attack conservatives, I'll join you, Paul. But I do. Look, the South. When I say I have a love-hate relationship with the South, I mean it. I'm not disputing any of the things that you hate. But look at a guy like Bill Clinton, right? Coming out of Arkansas, I think Bill Clinton taught non-Southerners that guess what? You can have a Southern accent and be really smart.
That's
true. And people didn't, I think, realize that.
And let me resonate with you in saying that two of my favorite authors are William Faulkner and Flannery O'Connor.
So there you go.
Both Southern Gothic writers.
There you go.
And so I do.
So that you don't completely hate the South. You don't completely hate the South. I just think you have to look realistically at it. And I think too many Southerners ignore the bad stuff and too many non-Southerners ignore the good stuff. And you, like me, you know, I'm never black and white. I always try to focus on the gray because that's where I think the world is.
Right. I do love barbecue, so.
There you go.
I do love Southern.
And it's better in Tennessee than Kansas. I'm telling you right now.
Okay. Well, and
we have sweet barbecue.
Darn good in North Carolina. So.
It, well, North Carolina and Tennessee barbecue are pretty similar, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess what I'm identifying is that I'm identifying conservatism, which seems to have its hub in the South.
It does. It does. I don't deny it. Although, you know, again, defending my hometown, Nashville, Tennessee is a blue island in a red state.
Right.
And so is Memphis. So, I mean, Nashville only votes for Democrats. Now, the surrounding area, the surrounding counties, you know, are all red. And you know, Tennessee used to vote for Al Gore. They used to vote.
You see, Mark, you look at some place like my home state of Michigan. Everybody with a half a brain, at least, and I'll claim at least a half a brain, has left. That's why Michigan has lost two.
Michigan is really depressed. And the thing about Michigan,
they've lost two representatives in Congress, and they're about to lose another one.
Michigan is a blue state that's been gerrymandered into a red state.
Right.
You know, in every national election, Michigan goes for the Democrat by 6-7 points often.
Right.
I mean, it's not even close. It's not even contested. And yet you've got – well, I don't know why you get the red governors. I can't explain that. But I can definitely explain the legislature, which is so gerrymandered that you get all those Republicans. Well, why are Michiganders voting for a Democratic president and a Republican governor?
Well, and the governor doesn't even like the Republican legislature right now. That's how wacky the legislature has become. But you know, I had to laugh when I heard Frank Luntz say that that Governor Snyder has brought down unemployment in Michigan faster than any other state. Guess why?
Because it was at 18% and it went down to 15%?
No, because everybody left. Everybody who could get a job somewhere else left.
Oh, all right, all right. That's a good reason.
Yeah.
If you scare everybody away, the one guy left is employed, and then you've got 0% unemployment.
Exactly.
All right.
Right.
All right, I didn't think about that. Thanks for your call, Paul. I do appreciate it. Let's go to Kevin in Santa Fe on line one. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I'm good. I want you to know I really enjoy hearing your voice on the radio.
Thank you. I appreciate
and,
that.
The issues you and Leslie bring to the table. Before I disagree with something you said a moment ago,
okay,
where you said that you thought institutional racism was largely gone.
Well, wait, no, I want to let me be clear, because if I misspoke, I want to correct the record. My point was advocacy of institutional racism is largely gone. I think the institutional racism is there. I don't think you see too often people saying it's a good thing we mistreat blacks in our. I mean, you know, in the 60s, they would proudly say segregation now and forever, and we're not going to let our blacks vote, or worse words than that. My point is that although I do agree it exists, and if I didn't say that, I want to be clear. I absolutely agree institutional racism exists. Look at Ferguson. Hello, Exhibit A. I don't think that as often – when we were talking with Paul, he was saying basically people were advocating for racism. That you don't see so much anymore. There are a few Klansmen around. There are people – there are nasty things people say in private. But what we learned from Indiana and Arkansas with anti-gay rhetoric. I mean, it's very hard for politicians to do anti-gay rhetoric openly. They might use code whistles, but they're not going to say, I don't want blacks to have equal rights. You're not going to find too many people say that. That's what I meant to say, and if I didn't express myself as well as I should have, I'm glad you gave the chance to correct the record.
Well, let me address that, okay? This is something that maybe you're not hearing it, and you mentioned the what they call the dog whistle politics.
Right.
Earlier on Tom Hartman, he was talking about, somebody mentioned how the Republicans care about Christians and care about these lunatic fringe groups, and I was thinking, no, they don't really care about them. They just care about their vote. And if they go very far right on those issues and their code speaks to this
the dog whistle.
They want to hear that, okay, vote for us. We'll make sure that they don't get this.
But here's what's happening, Kevin. In Indiana, that's why I think Indiana was a real watershed moment in American history. I think people are going to look back on Indiana as the moment when the seesaw tipped. And there was a time, no question, when hating gay people got you more votes than than believing in non-discrimination. That seesaw just tipped this year. And now Indiana made it clear that even if you're very conservative, and even if you want to support people with dog whistles that hate gay people, if you support discrimination, it looks bad, businesses leave, and the majority of your state doesn't like you. I think the same is true with racism. I think that being seen as a racist is not – we're not in the era of George Wallace anymore. There are plenty of George Wallaces around harming black people, but we're not in the era where George Wallace could stand in the schoolhouse door and say segregation now and forever and win votes. He's gonna you can do the dog whistles. You can't openly advocate for racism. You disagree?
Well, I think there was talk. I forget who it was. One of these Mitchell or somebody in the Republican Party earlier was talking in the 60s about how they could no longer use the N-word, but they put it into code in such ways, whether they're fighting about entitlement or Title IX or the repeal of the civil rights protection laws.
Well, which they did, and they support. But they're not going to say, I want to repeal civil rights because I don't think black people should be able to go to movie theaters. They're just going to say, it's old and we don't need it anymore and racism's over and this is hurting business. And so they'll use the code words. And weirdly enough, as bad as the code words are, it's better than open advocacy of discrimination, because once people realize that you can't do that anymore, then actually fewer people, I think, want to discriminate. Does that make sense?
I just think it's a mistake to let your guard down and lose.
Oh, I'm not letting my guard down.
People aren't gone.
I'm not letting my guard down.
I don't think when you use Indiana as an example, I don't really think that those guys have paid any price whatsoever. They may be sounding conciliatory in the news, but anything.
Oh, I think they have paid a price. I think Governor Pence was going to run for president, and he's not anymore. The Indiana law, it still doesn't prohibit discrimination, which it should, but it at least the religious freedom law doesn't allow discrimination. They did revise that law. I think this, again, at the tipping point, you know, things are pretty balanced at the tipping point. When it starts tipping to one side and the other, you don't see a dramatic swing. But what I think we saw is think of the seesaw. It's just starting to tip. And I think Indiana's very much been harmed. And I think Pence has very much been harmed. And the clearest example of that was Arkansas. Arkansas had to back down because Indiana backed down. And in North Dakota, there was just and I'm going to North Dakota, by the way, Thursday and Friday. I'm going to do this show from North Dakota. North Dakota just had a voted down a law that would have prevented discrimination. And the governor, Republican governor, condemned the Republican legislature for supporting discrimination. He said North Dakotans don't support discrimination. He understands that whether – I don't know what he believes in his heart, but he understands that publicly you can't say you support discrimination anymore. The majority of the public doesn't like that.
Well, I'll let you get to the next caller.
Okay. Thanks for your call. I've got to tell you, I've got Jennifer and Carol. I want you both to stay on with me. We're going to take a quick break and encourage others to call in as well. 888-653-7543. Back with Jennifer and Carol right after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. Love that song, by the way. Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. That's Bill Clinton's theme song. And God, what a song. You know, every time I see that, I think of Bill Clinton. I think about tomorrow. I think about a brighter day. Why can't I get good campaign music like that? Wouldn't that be great? I mean, it's just like you're thinking about the future. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. The idea is don't quit. Don't give up. Tomorrow can always be better. It's a brilliant choice of song. And, of course, Bill Clinton is the most brilliant politician of our day. So, I got to give him credit for that. And he is a Southerner, for all of you who hate the South. Let's go to Jennifer from California. She's been hanging on a while on line three. Hey, Jennifer, how are you?
How you doing, Mark?
Oh, that doesn't sound like Jennifer. Who's this?
Hello?
Oh, okay. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Yes, yes. I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good.
Great. Big fan.
Thank you.
as well as Leslie. Basically, I wanted to kind of wrap up this memories pizza thing.
Oh, okay. Well, let's remind people what that was. This was a pizza joint that said they wouldn't serve gay people in Indiana. And got a bunch of people
to jump in, Mark. Because that's what they always defend. They said they wouldn't cater gay weddings. They said they would serve gay people in their restaurant, but they wouldn't cater gay weddings.
They wouldn't cater gay weddings.
To me, is still not serving gay people, but just to be.
I don't know too many people that even have pizza at their weddings. All right. So, what did you want to say about memories?
Well, basically, I took to Twitter because that's one of my favorite outlets to kind of. Get this out.
Prevent?
You know, I'm shocked at the amount of people on Twitter that don't have a point. Their thing is, and when they've tried to argue against me, because believe me, I've been like told. And first, I treat them with respect, and I don't call them names. But that's the typical playbook. Call them names.
Well,
make
you know,
fun of them.
You're doing that hominem attack when you don't have a rational response.
Exactly. And I've welcomed, you know, a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll get in their point and block you. And I'm like, I don't block people.
Yeah, that's very third grade, isn't it? It's very 8-year-old. I got the last word. Then you slam the door and run. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, I remember kindergarten, okay.
Yeah, and that's my point, is that first, they don't have a rational thought, because first you get the what about us? Well, what about the guy that went to the Muslim bakery to get a gay-themed cake or something? First of all, the right-wing hack that did this for them was making fun of gay people.
Oh, yeah. Let me talk about this, because a lot of people don't know this. There was a case, I believe this was in Colorado, correct me if I had the state wrong, but basically where a guy came and wanted to write anti-gay things on a cake. And the baker said, you know what, I'll bake you the cake, because I serve everybody equally, but I won't do anything that's derogatory for anybody. And it actually went up to I think it was the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, and they said she was consistent, because she also wouldn't bake a cake that said Christians are evil or wrong, and she had baked other cakes that were pro-Christian. She's pro-Christian, she's pro-gay, she's pro-Muslim, she's pro-everyone, but she refuses to be anti-everyone. She's not going to say hateful things on a cake. And that was a consistent position, and it was upheld, and I think it's exactly the right way to resolve it.
Right, and that's the thing, is that this guy, and it's a different case, actually. Basically, what happened is they had this big uproar of gays, you know, the evil gays. Trust me, I've been called every name of the book now. It's great. I've got a list. And the evil gays, the gay Gestapo, mm-hmm. went and attacked the business, Memories Pizza, which I don't condone whatsoever. And
I agree with attacking it verbally. You can say, boycott this place. You can say, this place is wrong. You can say, you know, I wouldn't eat Memories Pizza. But you shouldn't say, you know, threats of violence or firebomb or anything like that, because no threats of violence are right. So, but certainly people have a right to say, I disagree with this pizza place and it's a terrible place. I mean, that's free speech too.
And I agree. And the thing is, though, is I get attacked back, or, you know, I mean, to be fair, I won't say attacked, but I get responses back saying that I'm a libertard. That,
you know what,
I know,
Jennifer?
It's hilarious.
Don't take it personally. You should
You
should see my hate mail. You should see my hate mail when I go on Fox News. I get that and worse. And I'll tell you something. When they attack you with names rather than argument, what they're really saying is, I have no rational way to respond to you. You must be right. So that's what I say. I say to people who do that, I say, thank you for complimenting me on my argument, because you've just admitted you have no rational response. Stick around if you want. We've also got Carol and Mark and Reggie all coming up after the break.